Oh, yeah. We're big rivals, and to be really close friends is difficult, you know.
He might be just a shy guy and doesn't want to bring a lot of attention to himself off the court. Or maybe he feels like he's got to put everything he's got into trying to deal with Federer and Nadal.
He's more or less just the same person that he ever was.
Success, thankfully, hasn't gone to his head. He's not a diva.
His absolute charm is that he is a superstar, and I don't even know that he knows it.
I just happen to feel a great allegiance to Andy. He's just been such an extraordinary example of how to improve yourself and get better at something and better at something.
It took him to cry for people to suddenly take a step back and go, wow, you know, he has got a heart. He is a sensitive soul.
Right, I'm going to try this, and it's not going to be easy.
To come so close, you know, and you just want to run there and hug him, you know.
He's proving himself time and time again.
Watching Andy, I get more worked up, more emotionally involved than I do my own team.
He's happier with himself because he achieved something he wanted to achieve.
It's just so amazing, and I still get goosebumps thinking about it.
Having won the Open, the press over in Britain are going to be focusing more at Wimbledon, and oh, he's got to win Wimbledon.
No, I just hope it's only the beginning.
Wimbledon men's singles final. Grand enough on any day.
Well, this is the final that we were looking forward to in so many ways. The top two players in the world playing on the top stage. 15,000 in here, and there's a chant going up to show their support.
It's one of the biggest matches, definitely, in my career, in Andy's career as well.
No one's ever been under more pressure to win a major event than Andy Murray in any sport. It's pressure time, pressure cooker, but this is a different league.
I am desperate to win. I love winning. I train extremely hard. I think people have started to see that side of me and accepted me for what I am.
When he wins Wimbledon, I think you will see what it means to him so much.
Yes, grand enough on any day, but on this day, centre court was about to soar. This is home on a wetter, colder day last year. Andy Murray came here already on a roll as gold medalist at the London Olympic Games and the winner of the US Open.
But you never know how busy it's going to be, but I hope there's a good turnout. Five or six people being down the high street, so yeah, this is a first for Dunblane, that's for sure.
Andy, we're proud of you, son. It's just amazing. It makes you proud. Proud to be Scottish.
It means the world to this town. We've had hard times and good times, and this is one of the good times.
You know, I don't know how many people were there, but it was enormous considering the size of Dunblane. And all these people were down the high street. It was stunning, absolutely stunning.
I went into the local news agents, Meldrums. Yeah, I remember I used to always go in there and steal penny sweets from him. I told him when I saw him, and he's got no penny sweets left in there anymore.
This is not as easy as it looks. Home has a name that comes with a shiver.
Do any of you know any famous tennis players? Who do you know?
Andy Murray.
Andy Murray. And do you know that Andy Murray went to this school? Yeah. And his brother, Jamie, and I came to this school as well. All of these things that we set up in here are all things that we used to do at home. You know, we were just normal family. We didn't have an awful lot of space, and the weather in Scotland is terrible, so you're always looking for things that you can do indoors to occupy young, active children. The balloon game that Jamie and Andy played in the hall was probably a favourite, but they put a piece of rope across the radiator to the wall to separate the hall and bat the balloon back and forwards. We're on fire now, aren't we? Wow, look how good he's got. And of course, Boom Boom Balloon was fabulous until the balloon hit the radiator and burst, and then it was all over.
Oh, there we go, good. Oh, sorry.
Sport
sorry.
Runs in the family. Tennis down the maternal line. His gran Shirley played. Mum Judy was a professional. There was football too. Granddad Roy played fullback for Hibernian. Add a sport-loving dad, no surprise, it all came to the Murray boys naturally, competitively.
Because we're similar age, we're always able to do it together. We're very competitive. I think he was certainly more competitive than me, and I'm sure, you know, other people, you know, that are close to us would testify to that as well.
Whether it was Monopoly or Snakes and Ladders, didn't matter what he was playing. Had to win, had to be the best.
Yeah, my nickname when I was a kid was Bam Bam. What? From the Flintstones, oh, because I used to just get so angry and I'd just be bashing things around.
Because you could be nice as Napins, enjoying himself, having good fun, and then you'd introduce a bit of competition into it and it would change. He said, oh, my God, you know, he's right in your face. The incident we had when he was... first time we got this lottery ticket, you know, he wanted to pick the numbers, and I said, no, I'll get the numbers. And we sat and watched the lottery numbers come up, and he was sitting there in front of the TV watching it with the ticket in his hand, called out the numbers. Of course, we didn't win, and he went crazy. You're rubbish at picking out my numbers, Dad, you know, you're not doing this again. You know, that's it, you know, just for a lottery ticket. So... you know, from a very young age, he's always been very competitive, very competitive.
We're quite big into the wrestling when we're growing up, and we would have sort of wrestling matches. You know, sometimes we would make up our own belts or whatever.
He was always bigger than me, and he would only let me win against him for the women's belt.
Yeah, that's all I would let him be, yeah.
Both the brothers began to win junior tournaments. At the age of 12, Andy won the prestigious Orange Bowl in Florida. Even at this tender age, serious rivalries were developing, but friendships too.
I know him since we are kids, as a real thing. We played the Winter Cup, all these competitions, under 12, under 14.
Nadal is obviously a good friend of Andy's, and they seem to go on really well, and he's a very humble guy.
And we play a lot of times PlayStation at the hotel, no? And yeah, we have a lot of fun.
He went off to play in the European Junior Team Championships under 16s for Great Britain. He came on the phone, he went, Mum, I've just been playing racquetball with Rafa. Do you know what he does? He trains with Carlos Moya, who was number one in the world at the time, in Mallorca. He doesn't go to school. He plays on clay. He's that. What do I have to do? I have to play down at university with you and my brother. I want to go to Spain. I need to go to Spain.
It was a good setup, but to be away from home, for me, for a parent, it was difficult. For someone that age to want to do that, couldn't have been easy for him.
We went out to see him and were almost appalled as to where he was staying. Mm. The mess that there was.
He could hardly open the door.
He seemed to be enjoying it and having a whale of a time out there, and he'd met some good friends and stuff that, you know, he's still in touch with today. And obviously that's where he met Danny, who's now travelling with them.
The first day he got there, they made him practice with me. I was like, oh my God, who's this kid? he's very good. And he always says that I gave him attitude that day and that I wasn't too nice to him, but I don't think that's true.
When he was 17, Andy won the Junior US Open at Flushing Meadows in New York. He dedicated his victory to the people of Dunblane.
Andy Murray went to this school and is from Dunblane.
Aw, I like that.
And that's Andy. That's his golden post box.
I think it's nice that, you know, after all the negative sort of publicity that, you know, the town got after what happened so many years ago, that, you know, that it's able to be shown in a positive light now, and yeah, I guess that's sort of testament to, you know, the success that, Andy's had.
This is the assembly hall. That's their clock up there.
Nice, isn't it?
Mostly when I go up to school now, if I'm doing something, I'll do it in the playground or I do it in the new gym, and I actually don't go near that part of the building. I found it quite difficult today when we went in to look at the clock in the assembly hall. Andy's class were on their way to the gym. His class were the next ones in the gym, and his class were stopped, you know, when somebody went up when they heard the noise and discovered what had happened.
As far as we know, a gunman burst in shortly after 9:30 this morning into the gymnasium where he opened fire. There are very, very few details from the scene itself.
On the 13th of March, 1996, Thomas Hamilton, armed with four handguns, went into Dunblane Primary School and shot dead 16 children, their teacher Gwen Mayer, and then himself.
I was one of hundreds of mums that were queuing up at the school gates waiting to find out what had happened, not knowing if your children were alive or not. So I'm going to struggle with this. There were lots and lots of questions from them, mainly, I think, because they knew the guy who had done it, because they used to go to one of his boys' clubs up at the high school. I had given him lifts up and down from the train station to the high school, so the fact that they knew him made the questions more, you know, why would he do something like that? Andy, from time to time, would talk about it. Jamie never, ever talked about it. And it was very, very difficult to avoid it because, of course, it affected the whole town.
You may not want to talk about it at all, but, you know, do you have any memories of that?
Yeah, I mean, this thing is something I never, you know, I never spoke about really ever since I went on the tour, because and since I started getting asked about it a lot in the press, because it's something that was obviously, yeah, I think for, you know, all of my family and, you know, and the town.
We'll finish there, don't worry, honestly.
No, it's okay. Yeah, so I think, yeah, it's just something that I think just all of my family and all of the people in Dunblane, because there, you know, there was a lot of, you know, at the time, you have no idea, like, how tough something like that is, and then but yeah, then as you start to get older, you realize, and yeah, the thing that is nice now, the whole town, they recovered from it so well, and you know, it wasn't until, you know, a few years ago that I started to actually, you know, research it and look into it a lot, because I didn't really want to know. So yeah, it's just nice that, yeah, being able to do something that's, yeah, that the town is proud of.
And I think that happened last year, you know, the golden, letterbox, all the things that happened, it's, you know, helped so much. Andy, we're going to leave it there.
Yeah.
Just want to say, I'm so sorry.
No, that's all right.
Maggie's taken to me, though.
No, he's okay. He just doesn't like it when anyone's taking the attention away from him.
The town has recovered incredibly well. The very strong community, the schools here are fabulous, and it's a real family-orientated town. I know that they both are very aware that what success they've had and the excitement they've maybe brought to the town has hopefully helped a lot with the moving on process.
The second Sunday of July last year, the Wimbledon men's singles final. In it, the great Roger Federer from Switzerland, ever popular at the All England Club. And Andy Murray, from where?
People are kind of surprised that somebody English or Scottish can play tennis.
All Scottish.
Well, Tim Henman's not bad.
Not bad, but he's at another level. You travel around the juniors, and I can imagine anybody in the United States, where I come from, say, an English kid won the U.S. Open Junior?
Scottish.
What happened to the rest of the Scottish.
Since 2005, this proud Scot has been in the public eye. His opinion sought, his picture taken, his every word analysed, and sometimes coming back to haunt him.
Andy and I were doing an interview before Wimbledon. It was a World Cup year, and as ever, you know, Scotland hadn't qualified, so I started giving him abuse, saying, you know, it must be a nightmare being Scottish, because you never qualify for the European Championships, you're not in the World Cup.
As much as he would make jokes, you know, to me about the Scotland football team, you know, I would also do the same about the English football team, and it doesn't make someone pro or anti-English or Scottish, it's just something that friends do with each other.
We were laughing, and it was just, you know, banter. And the journalist actually sort of said, what are you going to do? Who are you going to support? And Andy, just totally off the cuff, said, oh, you know, I don't care. I'll support anyone that's playing England.
It was a treat the tabloids couldn't resist. Hate mail came his way by the sackful, the price of banter.
I do all the time. And I tell all my players, you know how many bets I've lost with Robson and Bruce and Neville and Scholes over the years, fortunes. If England were to win a World Cup, God forbid, then I would be delighted if my players were involved in it. I really would. People would get too serious about these things.
The wrong choice of word at the wrong moment can basically cause you months and sometimes years of hassle.
Done various sorts of things with different sportsmen in an entertainment capacity, and the point is that these are all incredibly young guys, and they've all at one stage or another been done over by journalists, basically. And once that happens, once you've sort of openly spoken to a journalist and they've taken one thing of what you said, splashed it like that and turned a lot of people against you, you just sort of shut down, I think.
I've always felt sort of protective of him because he's, you know, he's out there, you know, he's doing brilliantly, but it's a little bit lonely in, you know, playing as a British tennis player in you know, this country, playing on the world stage, because there aren't many others.
Off court, at a walking pace, with Kim Sears, artist, girlfriend, and their dogs.
So this is Maggie, we've got, and that's Rusty. Maggie was named after Maggie May, the Rusty Stewart song.
And whose job is it to look after them, walk them, feed them?
Whose job is it, Andy?
I like the responsibility of having them during training, or like during Wimbledon, for example. I can't get off
it. They're a good wake-up. Andy's not always been good at waking up in the morning. He has got better since we've had them, but I can always send the dogs in to jump on his face and he's going to wake up with a smile.
Yeah, come on, let's let them off now. You'll just be desperate to just bomb
them. They don't run off then, they're quite good.
This one does. She'll chase anything that moves.
Okay.
She behaves herself.
I'm sure she will.
He's generally really good. He does come back. Maggie!
Rusty's gone to look for her.
in San Jose, you were sort of launched into the limelight, weren't you? Yeah. Because suddenly Andy wins this tournament out of nowhere, and it's all over the news.
It was a great week. We had so much fun. I went away with him thinking, oh, it's fine because he's never going to win the tournament, and I'll be back in time for school on Monday. And then he did. I remember just saying to Mum, like, oh, you've got to call in and tell them I've got the winter vomiting virus or something, and I'm not going to be in. But it ended up on the front page of the papers, and they were like, oh no, you're busted, sorry. But it was a bit weird the few days that followed, because we had, you know, quite a few people following us around and people turning up at my school and things. But it's quieted down since then. It's kind of
she's a disaster.
They're really good in the house and everyone thinks they're amazing, and then we take them out and they just disgrace themselves.
What were you doing? Huh?
I was talking to Kim about how San Jose sort of launched, well, both of you big time into the spotlight.
Yeah, we definitely don't court it, I think. So I think for the most part they do leave us alone. And I think we're really boring as well, so they probably...
Yeah, I mean, like the last few Wimbledons and stuff, like a few of the photographers have like waited outside the house and then like to see what we're doing on the off days, and it was like... I think after like the fifth or sixth dog walk, they were like, this is a waste of time, so that they don't come back anymore.
Yeah.
What was worth following him for was his tennis. His followers were loving his march to the Wimbledon final.
Do you look forward to Wimbledon, Kim, or is it sort of a...
No, it's what I'd say. I used to.
The finals was difficult for everybody involved, you know, Andy, myself, the crowd, because for all the matches I've played there, for finally a Brit being in the finals again, and it was a big deal for both of us.
There was incredible pressure. Pressure on Andy from media, spectators, himself was just incredible. And there were days after the matches where my head was just spinning.
There's been so much talk about how Murray is going to start this match, having been in three slam finals and never won a set. Murray's ahead.
The great Roger is under assault here.
Crowd up here on centre court. Murray was not going to miss on that point.
It's a set point.
It's a brilliant start from Murray. He's got a set on the board.
I was at the final. Until they put the roof up, I thought he was going to do it, you know. But as soon as the roof and Federer's shots get better, you know, and Federer's fantastic in Wimbledon, you know.
Championship point.
Championship number 7 for Roger Federer. He's done himself proud, but it's a fourth Grand Slam final where he hasn't won.
I think that was a huge turning point for him to come so close and not be able to do it. I think was obviously was very difficult.
At the end, when he had to take the microphone and do the runners-up speech, I found that very difficult just to watch. It's just such a brave thing to do.
Right, I'm going to try this and it's not going to be easy.
Just want to run there and hug him, you know? I mean, I even feel kind of emotional thinking about it now.
I'm going to try and not look at him, so I'll start crying again, but everyone that's in the corner over there that's supported me through this tournament, it's always tough, and he did a great job, so thank you.
I think it was good for him. I think it was good for other people to see. I think it was a defining moment for him.
And last of all, to you guys. Everybody always talks about the pressure of playing at Wimbledon, how tough it is, but it's not the people watching. They make it so much easier to play. the support's been incredible, so thank you.
I thought it was sad on a number of levels, obviously because he was incredibly disappointed, but I find it slightly sad that it took him to cry in his acceptance speech for people to suddenly take a step back and go, wow, you know, he has got a heart, you know, he is a sensitive soul.
I think if nothing else, you're going to get more people understanding what it means to you as a person, because he's a pretty guarded guy, very guarded, actually.
Boy, what class and grace that he showed in a moment. And I think that in many ways humanized Andy for the public and for the press.
You know, normally when you lose a match, you can kind of go back to the locker room and you're upset, and you know, I've seen loads of great players in the locker room crying after matches, mm-hmm. but you don't always see it in front of in front of the crowd. But then obviously when you lose in a final like that and you have to speak, then it's tough sometimes to hold the emotions together.
You couldn't look at them, but I was facing them, and it was a lot of tears up in the box as well.
There were a lot of tears, yeah, there were. It's just horrible seeing someone you care about go through that, and I think we'd all been there, and the immediate aftermath wasn't pretty.
Yeah, it was bad.
What do you do? Do you want to lock yourself away, or do you want to
normally,
just get out?
Normally, I mean, I go quiet. I don't speak much, but after that match, like, I cried for so long. Like, even when we got back home, I found that match really, really hard.
From a young age, he wanted to win a Grand Slam. That was what he set out to do, and he's been very driven.
He's got a real work ethic. I don't know where he's got that from. He could chill out, do what he wants to do, but he doesn't.
And he started to go out to Miami in his off-season, and from what, you know, the guys around him say that he kills himself, and you know, you can see that in, you know, his performances in Australia the last few years. You know, he's had great results, and he's always looking like he spent the whole month of December working hard and not kind of enjoying his sort of turkey and the trimmings.
The making of a Grand Slam winner stretches across the continent. This is Miami, Florida, where he's been coming to train for 5 years.
Most of the time we come here is obviously just for training. But yeah, I mean, weather's always good, good food here, lots of guys to practice with. Serena Williams is just in one of these blocks here.
You've worked with Andy now for over 6 years, I think.
That's six years.
I mean, his body shape has changed, and that's down to sort of your torture methods.
Yeah, constructive torture. And like I said earlier, and down to his genetics. I mean, his genetics are superb, and he's an amazing athlete to work with. And it was quite clear what he needed. He was always fast enough. He's got a good engine. He reads the game. His anticipation is fantastic. His speed is natural. So if you can put, you know, a lot of strength and endurance on the back of that, then you're not going to go too far wrong. A normal day for him will be at least 4 or 5 hours. He'll do a lot of stuff in the gym, a lot of basic lifting to get his foundation strength up. And then it's all mileage, so it's all long, long intervals, like, you know, 10K runs, court sprints on the court, replicating what he does. So it's all endurance. Yeah, it's not pretty.
The last 4 or 5 years, I mean, I've really enjoyed going to the gym and, you know, sort of embraced the physical challenges that we have on the court now. And
okay, this one fast. 3, 2, 1, and go. Drive, push, first step. Drive, good, Andy, ready. Good. Beauty, go, go. Stop, good, okay, both.
It is a sort of a time where you're seeing the game played in a different way than it ever has. Now, some of it's because these guys have access to things that we only dreamed of having access to. Now they have their own trainers. You know, they could have a physical trainer, a trainer that takes care of the body, a cook, a masseuse, a tennis coach. I mean, that's five right there. Forget your girlfriend or your wife or your kids.
In charge of the Murray body is his physio, Andy Ireland.
Whether you win or lose, you still need to do your recovery. And I think that's certainly been the hardest part for a lot of athletes I've worked with. It's the last thing you want to do when you're finishing late at night is then do all your media, get back, do an ice bath, do physio, do massage and recovery. And it can be 3, 4, or 5 hours after the match finishes before, you know, he's ready to go to bed. So, yeah, I don't think it's a fun part of the day.
The rest of the team. For fitness, Jez Green and Matt Little. And on the tennis side, his good friend Danny Valverde and coach Ivan Lendl.
When I first started working with everyone, you know, people were saying, oh, he's got such a big team. And then a couple of years later, you know, everyone was doing a similar thing. Tennis is hard when you're growing up. My coach used to make sure I was in bed at the right time, basically almost babysitting you a little bit. Whereas now, been on the tour a long time, I know what I want.
Which means Andy is now in charge and prepared to make changes. Coaches Mark Petchy, Brad Gilbert and Miles McLagan have come and gone.
And I think he's made a lot of decisions in his professional career that probably one or two people might have backed off from, but he hasn't.
A year and a half ago, he appointed a new coach, Ivan Lendl, winner of 8 Grand Slam titles, but twice his age.
He likes to work hard, and what else can you ask of your player? Go and work hard and try for every point, and what happens, happens.
Lendl was also an incredible workhorse. He had a lot of discipline in his own career and training, and he certainly has gotten Andy to believe and to be physically believe in himself.
He's someone who could look him in the eye and say, I've sort of been in your position, which very few people could say. Ivan, before he beat me in the French, had lost 4 finals, and Murray had lost 3, I believe. So there was sort of a similarity.
Well, for me, to be able to speak to someone who'd gone on to be a great player but had also been in a lot of the same situations as me on the court was, you know, so helpful.
I'm there for anything he needs. Before the matches, we go through strategy. I let Andy talk first and then Danny. And if there's something I think I have noticed about the opponent or what's going on right now, I add it. But it very, very few times I have to add anything. The boys have it covered pretty well.
Wimbledon 2012, he was back on centre court, there not as a one-man Scot, but part of the British Olympic team.
He was desperate to do something for Team GB. He was going to play in everything. He was going to play the singles, the men's doubles, the mixed doubles, but he was going to get a medal for the team.
There'll be a medal for Murray.
He beat Djokovic in the semi-finals. Youngest son came on the phone. We've got to go, we've got to go. And they had, of course, the 2 children, dog, everything. So that evening, you can imagine what it's like trying to get two children and a dog organised. And Neil said, I'll drive. He said, we'll all go down together. And off we went.
The night before my final was the night when Jess Ennis, Mo Farah, Greg Rutherford won their gold medals. It was a huge inspiration, I think, gave, you know, me some momentum going into the final the following day, and I went on to play maybe the best match of my career.
He lost a tough match to Federer, but he sort of had to come back real quick and get into the Olympics, and that was the first time where I really saw the crowd really behind him, way more than Federer.
It just seemed to be that the whole crowd were just behind him. And I don't think he'd experienced that in that environment in Wimbledon before. I don't think he felt he was loved there. There was obviously people who did, but at the Olympics it was incredible.
Andy just dominated. I mean, from the word go, he played incredible tennis.
It's a golden tracker for Andy Murray.
What a response from 28 days ago.
You know, and I think that it kind of was the making of him, really. It kind of showed me kind of how much he'd sort of grown up and matured and whatnot. Because I think maybe in the past, maybe he wouldn't have been able to have dealt with that so well.
I think that Wimbledon made him realize that he can win. And I think that the gold medal on the Wimbledon grounds made him believe that he's going to win.
I remember him coming up, and we're all standing on the lawn waiting for him, drinking champagne, and he came up and put the medal around there. He said, "Is that what you're waiting for, Minnie?" He calls me Minnie because I'm so small, you see, and he's tucks me under his armpit. So, "Is that what you're waiting for, Minnie?" And he put the medal around my neck, and you sort of went, "Oh," because it's really heavy. I was genuinely very thrilled.
Brilliant. That was brilliant. Fantastic.
And it placed him high now in the nation's affections.
In third place, Andy Murray.
Well, well done to Andy, and to present the award out in Miami, his good friend and a former winner of this award, Lennox Lewis.
Somebody said to me, they're going to tell me when to give him the trophy. So I said, OK. So he took the trophy. I said, "No, nobody said nothing yet." So I was kind of taking it back.
Well done. Well done, Andy. It's yours and well deserved. Well done.
In fact, somebody said to me, "said I bet you can't make him laugh," and I did make him laugh just with that.
Well done.
He's very, very quiet. He's like me, reserved. You know, he's not really into the tinsel stuff and the bling bling.
Bought a really dodgy Ferrari once, but I think that might have gone back now. I think his girlfriend used to call it the red car.
The job, it's true, could be worse. Life on the road, there's no junk food here.
Could I have the penny with spicy tomato sauce, please?
We try to enjoy our moments outside of the tennis. We play with probably with a lot of pressure every week, and a nice story in a restaurant of New York. He was, you know, he was with his girlfriend sitting there in a very nice restaurant, and I was with, you know, part of my team and some colleagues, and I have two numbers. I was texting him like 5-6 messages. I love you. I want to see you. He was just in front of his girlfriend, no? So he was, you know, I put him in a very bad position, and all of us, all my team and myself, you know, was a very funny moment. But
can I have it with no Parmesan? Thank you. When I first started playing on the tour, I mean, I didn't eat well at all when I was like 18. I mean, first time I played Wimbledon, I had like Pizza Express was my post-match meal, whereas I would never even think of doing that now.
He eats well, he can afford to dress well. If he chooses, he can lead the high life.
The worst thing that could happen to Andy Murray is he suddenly gets his teeth veneered and starts acting or behaving like a superstar.
That way.
When I was a kid growing up and you told me that Rod Laver ate peanut butter, the odds would go up that I'd want to try it because maybe I'd have a left arm as big as he did. So if someone decides they want to brand Andy Murray in a way where they show some of his personality, I think that's a good thing.
There is a new projection of Andy Murray by the creator of the Pop Idol shows and founder of XIX Entertainment, Simon Fuller. The man behind the Beckhams is putting Andy out there.
Normally, I don't really enjoy those things that much, but that was really good fun because there was a lot of fire involved in it. You know, they had these, like, sort of stuntmen that normally use fire, and they were lighting, basically, nets behind me, and it was so hot. They set my racket on fire as well when I was holding it.
You look back at me, you grab. Just a little bit there. Nice. Chin comes up a little bit. Nice.
Individual looks and style on the court has really developed a following, and obviously Roger plays the sort of classic gentleman, and Rafa's sort of much more, you know, out there, a bit more edgy. I always thought back then that Andy had a lot of potential. It just seemed to me that he was a different kind of style representative for the sport.
He appeared in Anna Wintour's American Vogue. This was a very different look. Was it a gamble?
I don't think Andy Murray has ever been a gamble.
He's somebody that is very true to himself, so he would never have done it had he not felt that was the right thing to do. He was sharp and, you know, he was sexy and he was strong and, you know, he scrubbed up well.
Last two or three years, I've definitely improved at dealing with those things because it becomes part of your job. And then the sooner you accept that, then the more you can enjoy it and have fun with it.
There is the fast lane, the high life. There is also the slog of getting there. The hard road, the recovery sessions, the ice bath.
How long does it seem to be in there for that?
10 minutes. I've had to lure Andy in with a packet of sweets.
Don't think you've ever done one, have you?
Well, it's not my job.
This isn't my job either.
Well, it's part of it.
It's not my job to sit in an ice bath.
You were in agony on the court.
Come on, man.
You need to get in.
This is
it.
I'm not hygienic.
The face. Show the face.
I'm not sure. I might just...
Hey!
I'm sorry.
They need one. Get it.
These noises that keep coming out. I've done it.
You've only got 9.5 minutes left.
He's actually a joy to be around. He's hilarious. He's sarcastic, he makes jokes. So few people get to see that side of him.
He takes what he does unbelievably seriously. He takes himself not seriously in any way.
Dad?
Sorry, do you mind if we get a photograph? He's a huge
fan. Yeah, you're my fourth favourite tennis player. No, fifth.
OK, anyway, I'm meeting a friend, so...
Actually, sorry, Andy, my stupid mates, they don't believe you're Andy Murray, cos I think the picture we took doesn't really look like you. Maybe because you were smiling. Do you reckon there's any chance we could do another one where you try and look more you? Like emo? Yeah? All right, thanks.
I know Andy a little bit off the court, and he's a real likable, easygoing kind of guy. And on the court, he seems incredibly moody and slightly unpredictable.
He's feisty, he's competitive, he's angry often because he wants to win.
You've not done anything the whole match, you just sat there and told the score.
He could sulk with the best of them at times, and, you know, he had a few incidents on the court, but, you know, who doesn't? But he was just playing at incredibly high level at an incredibly young age.
His way of sort of blowing some steam was to sort of yell at his entourage and sort of berate himself and get sort of to the point where it became negative.
I get annoyed watching him sometimes when he's kind of in that frame of mind, and you just kind of want to shake him a bit. But I think certainly in the last 2 years or so, he's made a conscious effort to improve on that.
I would like him to do none of that. He still does some, of course, but he's not going to change all the way. But less he does of that, better he usually plays.
He's been on me for that during practices and in matches, you know, all the time when I've been with him, about just trying to look forward, forget the past. And also, you know, for me, if tactically or, you know, I'm good at working matches out, if you're getting angry and worrying about what's happened in the past, you can't use one of your best assets.
Late August last year, the start of the fourth and last of the Grand Slam events of 2012. There to watch fellow Scots, Sir Sean Connery, Sir Alex Ferguson.
A friend of mine says, look, do you fancy going to the semi-final? And I saw Judy Murray down in their box, and I text her and I says, I'm right above you, watching your every move. His fingers crossed, you're bang, bang, bang. She texts back, she says, you know, could I come up and see you after?
We went up to his friend's box and had a glass of wine with him, and he wanted to go down and see Andy.
And a bump in the Connery, and he's in an ebullient mood.
And he said, "Where's Andy, Judy? Where's Andy?" And I said, "He's in media." But I said, "We're going to go along and just wait outside the media room."
Physically, it was not the most tiring match.
So well, the press room, and I was quite happy to stand outside the press room.
And Sean said, "Well, I want to see Andy." He said, "Come on, Alex, let's just go in." And I was like, "Oh, no." And they just opened the door and went in and invaded the press conference. And it was just the funniest thing.
This is his mother to Judy. "You've been drinking." She said, "It's him." She blamed me.
It was Alex's fault. I said, "He made me have one." You know, to have two great Scottish icons like that, you know, just so excited about what he was doing, I mean, that was just huge.
In the final, an old friend and rival.
We played the first official match, I remember, a 12 and under tournament in France. He won quite comfortably. It's very nice to see the evolution of the player and a person that you know for such a long time.
You're talking about a pretty unique time in our history. It was sort of a magical time tennis-wise. I think there's an argument to make that Nadal and Federer are the two greatest players that ever played. Djokovic is starting to, you know, crash the party. Murray's had to work exceptionally hard just to sort of stay level, even have a chance against these guys.
I see somebody that's pretty darn gifted, a guy that has every right to be out there playing against arguably the best two for sure of all time.
Always the British press asked me a lot of times that if Andy was ready to win a Grand Slam, and I always said, yes, he is.
There remained the serious business of finishing the job. This was his second Grand Slam final of the summer, his fifth in total. He had yet to emerge from any as the winner.
Of all the players that I've been around, he, to me, has the most pressure. After several of these losses, it looked like, you know, he was extremely down and having trouble handling it.
I felt the least confident I'd felt going into a Grand Slam final. I was incredibly nervous.
Murray in the lead in the US Open final.
I felt good about that match throughout the match because Andy kept making Novak work for every point.
For any top sportsman, it requires more than the ability. It requires an inner belief in yourself, a passion and desire to get over the line.
When you're watching something when it's live, it's like the greatest performance, you know. And it was it had crescendos and it built and it was magical and it was lyrical.
If Andy Murray is to win his first major, he's got to go all the way into a fifth set.
I don't normally go for toilet breaks that much, but I mean, I think we've been playing about 4 hours by that stage.
I was thinking about having lost in finals before. I was thinking, you know, no one had ever lost their first five Grand Slam finals. I was just thinking about what happened at Wimbledon, you know, was I going to be able to win this one?
If he loses this from two sets up, how do we bring him back from this? And particularly after the Wimbledon final, where he was absolutely devastated. I mean, really devastated.
Splashed some water on my face. I spoke to myself, I told myself out loud, you know, that I wasn't gonna let this happen.
Forget what's happened, give 110% and fight as hard as you can for every single point in this set.
And his shots get better in the first set. I was just willing him on because I thought he had a chance, you know.
There's just these incredible moments where you know it's someone's time.
Murray for the US Open. It's out! And Andy Murray has won his first Grand Slam!
It was a sense of relief for him, you know, that he'd actually got the monkey off his back, as they call it.
It was so tense through the whole thing. If he manages to win another one, I hope I'll manage to enjoy it a bit more.
He always had a fantastic game. He was getting to the Grand Slam finals, but he wasn't able to make that final step. And I think the confidence that he got out of that US Open win was immense. I think he deserved to win after everything, after being in that position a lot of times, just very close to made it. It's the fair thing that he won, no? And I was very happy.
Maybe he should take more loop breaks, you know. It's a good strategy.
I've been so sad, like, after Wimbledon. The Olympics, I was so happy, and then with the US Open, like, it was completely different. I wasn't bouncing off the walls, I couldn't sleep.
You slept on the plane, didn't you, on the
way back? I slept on the plane.
Because he had some champagne.
Yeah.
Everyone asks, oh, has Andy ever gotten drunk? And I always say the only time he did was on the way back from the US Open. I fell asleep because I was so tired, and I woke up and he was like, oh, I've had a few glasses of champagne. He said, you never guess what I've just done. I just went to the toilet to brush my teeth and I used face cream by accident. I think it shows you a little bit of a lightweight. Maybe the altitude made it worse.
I dreamt after Wimbledon that I'd won Wimbledon, and then I woke up and I hadn't, and I was gutted. And then after the US Open, I was sleeping on the couch and I dreamt that I'd lost. And I woke up, and then, like, when I realised I'd won, I think that was kind of when it started to sink in and I started to enjoy it a bit more. And we had, like, a lot of our friends and family came around, a lot of, like, people that I'd worked with, coaches that I'd worked with all through my career, and that was good.
2013, Wonder Year plus one. Runner-up at the Australian Open, two tour wins, all was going well. Until down he went with a back injury. It meant he missed the red clay of the French.
When I realised I was going to have to pull out of the French Open, you then understand how much those tournaments mean to you. Now I'm going to be even more strict with the rehab and all the treatments and stuff that I get for it, so hopefully it doesn't happen again.
On the green grass of home, it was as if he'd never been away.
That's it. Third title at Queen's Park.
The public Andy Murray and the other Andy Murray. There was more tennis that day in aid of his friend and fellow player, Ross Hutchins.
We're playing an exhibition match right after we're done with this nonsense. But my best friend over there, Ross Hutchins, he was diagnosed with cancer.
Now, people in his team around me told me that the news kind of was difficult. But to me, he was, you know, as you would expect, very, very tough. You know, his first thing was, you know, you're going to dominate this and you're going to come through it and you're going to be better after. And I know it's maybe a cliche, but what everyone would say, but actually the way someone says it to you means you can hear it sort of in their voice and in what they say. One thing that was noticeable that he did, which he does, whether it's fantasy football, whether it's scouting opponents when he was younger, is he researches things. And the next day, he was talking about sportsmen that have come through cancer, the cure rate of my cancer, the treatments, he just researches things.
Andy and Tim Henman against Thomas Burdick and coach Ivan Lendl to raise money for the Royal Marsden Hospital.
Oh!
Yes!
Got him. He got it!
Yeah! Yeah!
Game, set and match, great
career. It's a double. Well done, Mr. Good luck next week.
Thanks.
He has helped me so much in coming through this whole cancer treatment. He won't even know he's helping me.
BBC Radio Scotland.
Good morning, it's 9 o'clock. People have been camping out all night at Wimbledon ahead of today's men's singles final when Andy Murray takes on the world number one, Novak Djokovic. The match begins at 2 o'clock. Maura Kinnebar reports.
After all the upsets and injuries earlier in the tournament...
It could be a first time for how many years that an Englishman can, or Britishman can win it, you know, so... Got to be here to view it.
He's grown up, a boy's become a man.
I'd be gutted if he lost, put it that way. I think it's his time, so yeah, I think this is it. Yeah.
Novak Djokovic to serve. Ready? Play.
We're both playing good and being confident, and of course, he's going to have more support on his side, so you know, I'll be ready for whatever is coming up.
I learned a lot from the final last year. I'll give 110%. I hope it's enough. I'm going to try for every single point.
This is
world-class hitting. Getting the first set, it was very, very hot out there. That was obviously important.
I feel this is the most important game of the match so far.
And he finds the line once again. Three straight games. Murray back in the second set at 4-all.
Let's just hope the man from Dublin keeps his cool.
Two sets to love, you know, that was it was a strong position. Was that emphatic or what? A hold to love, two sets to Murray. He's a set away from history.
When Andy was two love up in the third, I kind of sensed that people were thinking, OK, he's got it now, and I've been around tennis long enough to know that it's never over till it's over.
Any point will do.
The waiting is over.
6-4, 7-5, 6-4.
He's gonna do it, and I was right through the minute he started, all the way through.
Amazing Hollywood story, I call that. Imagine where Andy Murray's from, where he started to play, what he had to come through. He's the first Brit to remember in 77 years. He's a two Grand Slam winner, and he's on his way to number one.
When I saw him actually getting the trophy, holding the trophy up, I thought, wow, he's done it.
It's going to take a few days, maybe a few weeks, few months, before it'll sort of settle in.
Have you had champagne?
Yes, in here.
A glass of champagne. We didn't have any more.
No, I only had half a glass, because I talk enough as it is with a glass of champagne. I might have been a bit too talkative.
Defeat, failure, falling on your face, falling on your ass are the only things that teach you how to win.
77 years of history, it does take a little time to sink in. Perhaps you have to put a little distance between the day and the realization. The morning after.
The dogs slept with us last night. I only slept for about an hour and a half, so Rusty was sleeping on my head last night, so he woke me up at about 6:30 this morning. I didn't realize how many of my family were here, but a lot of them came and I got to see them after the match. But yeah, I mean, when I went up to the box, you can see how emotional everyone was, and yeah, they'd obviously seen how it was last year after the final, and yeah, to have won is pretty cool. When we walked out on the court, there was not one seat left in the house, and now it's just nice and peaceful. The atmosphere was amazing, so loud the whole time. They got right behind me when I needed it, so it was a cool day yesterday. I'd say probably the emotions I had in that last game, the last four or five points, it was like one blur, but I know I'm never going to play in that much sort of panic, stress, excitement ever again in my career, and I'm really happy about that, because it was tough. I mean, I was struggling to breathe. I saw a couple of the points in the last game, and I was so out of breath. I was just so tense, so I can hopefully enjoy my tennis a bit more and be a bit more relaxed in the future. Can I walk down to the other end and just say hi to the groundsman down there? All I was searching for
was me. A chance to breathe again, to breathe all this in. Life in front of the cameras, because of what Andy Murray did as the man behind his racket.